We cannot excuse the violence and the burning and the looting.
That's it.
But we can know this.
Well,
it is not a threat. It is a reality. As long as there is no justice, there will be no peace.
Go ahead, Doc.
Number two, America must deal with the pathology of racism that exists within all sectors of our nation.
Go ahead, bro.
It is a pathology of racism.
All right.
It is a pattern of thought that says a black life is not as valuable as a white life.
That's the voice of Vernon Howard, the pastor of St. Mark Church, speaking to a group of civil rights leaders and clergy after a march to the federal courthouse in Kansas City yesterday afternoon. Kansas City and St. Louis, they're like cousins, related but different. So while protests, riots, community police tensions, and a National Guard presence take hold in St. Louis, what's going on here in Kansas City on the other side of the state? So far, it's pretty much a study in contrast. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we'll hear about the last couple of nights of activity here in Kansas City. Later in the show, we'll turn our attention to Thanksgiving entertainment. For now, it's my pleasure to welcome Damon Daniel to the show. He's with us from an organization called Communities Creating Opportunities. Hi, Damon.
Hello.
So on Monday night, you and Reverend Dr. Wallace Hartsfield organized a gathering for reflection and sanctuary at the Metropolitan Missionary Baptist Church at 23rd and Linwood. And then last night, you organized a prayerful response rally. What inspired you to come together and orchestrate these two consecutive events?
Well, and there's also a march that's happening this morning at 11 o'clock. We're going to be meeting at Woodland and Brush Creek and marching over to the plaza. And, you know, this... What inspired this is the series of violent acts against young black men, not just Mike Brown, but folks like Ezell Ford, folks like Eric Garner, and others whose families have not received justice. And so, you know, the clergy and the community have been wanting to express for quite a while the outrage and the disappointment, as well as to let the community know that there is hope and that there is a coalition of folks that are coming together to unite a movement.
Had you planned this before the grand jury decision was announced? How much lead time did you have to get these things together? 3 days of events, that's a lot of planning.
Yeah, actually, no, we didn't. The clergy actually came together Friday. I was in St. Louis over the weekend and came back on Sunday and connected with Reverend Hartsfield to help plan the events on Monday and yesterday and then today.
The phrases that you've used, mm-hmm. reflection and sanctuary, mm-hmm. what was it? I mean, you must have had a lot of different ideas about what it is that this community would need at the mm-hmm. moment that this announcement was made. What made you think about reflection and sanctuary the night of the announcement?
Well, I think, you know, mostly when you think about our churches and what the assets that they provide to the community, one of them being counseling, one of them being a place where people can come and express how they feel and just have a voice or a shoulder or ear as well. And so it was a natural sort of reaction.
How many people showed up that first night?
You know, not very many folks showed up. There's always, particularly at Metropolitan, there's groups that come, particularly on Mondays, for counseling that have experienced trauma. And so counselors are usually always on hand there on Mondays. But this particular evening, the church was just made themselves available. And there were other congregations throughout the city, like Concord Fortress of Hope Church in South Kansas City, that was also available Monday night, too.
What about last night, the prayerful rally?
Yeah. So the prayerful rally, I think we had a little over or close to like 300 folks that came out last night. And it was a very moving experience. There was a moment where Pastor Hartsfield asked for folks to be in a moment of silence for 45 seconds. We were trying to mirror that as the request of the family for the 4.5 minutes. But what we did within that 4.5 minutes was allow folks to express what they feel as it relates to these events. And so folks had a chance to kind of air out in one word or a sentence about what this moment meant for them. And then also what they're prayerful for or what they're hopeful for, as well as with one word or a sentence.
What did people say? What were the words and sentences that struck you and moved you?
You know, some folks said words like with respects to the what has occurred. Some folks said outrage. Some folks said deceived. Some folks said injustice. Some folks said lynching. And then on the
flip side, hurts my heart.
Yeah. I mean, well, when you think about it, I mean, honestly, I was in Ferguson for a series of about 6 or 7 weeks, consecutive weeks. And it never had occurred to me to really go to the site where Mike Brown's body was lying until someone came and said, hey, can we go to the site? So I did. And, you know, it was a very... It reminded me of what I've read in history books about lynchings, where bodies, black bodies, would be hanging in the trees, and it kind of reminded me of the Billie Holiday song, right? Strange Fruit. And as I looked at the bloodstained ground and the memorial site, it was very much reminiscent of what I can imagine a lynching site being, with blood still stained on the ground. So I can understand folks saying lynching. I can understand folks saying things like that. But then folks were also saying hopeful, justice, peace, love as well.
It's interesting that so much of the expression that you're describing is about words more than acts. Mm. Can you talk about the role that words can play in expressing frustration, anger, outrage, all of those things, because we're hearing so much about acts expressing that that same thing in St. Louis.
Well, you know, there is, when you have a community that has experienced trauma and or deep oppression, one of the ways in which people can release that kind of anger or stress is verbalizing what they're feeling. And so those creating space for people to be able to express that is very important. And so the words do mean a lot.
Kansas City's mayor, Sly James, has called for nonviolence, but he's also acknowledged the pain people feel. He's opened up and shared his own story of having been a young African-American man in Kansas City after Martin Luther King was shot when riots broke out here. Do you think that our mayor has influenced the tone here in Kansas City?
I don't believe so.
Tell me why.
I mean, I think I don't like to speculate, but I don't believe that the mayor's impact has been that has been such that it has had much of an impact on as far as the response that people have had or haven't had. I think that Kansas City is. Has recognized for a long time the racial divide that exists here. And it's one of the, you know, biggest elephants in the room, and a lot of folks don't talk about it. But what I found in recent months and weeks is that folks are open to discussing the issues of race. They're open to discussing the issues of what has separated us and what continues to separate and divide our city.
So I feel like I hear you saying that Kansas City's response is what Kansas City's response would have been, regardless of a speech that's been made or something like that.
Yeah.
So when you've heard these conversations in Kansas City about race, I think we've all been hearing them, but I'm curious what they sound like in your community, among people you speak with.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of expression of, you know, empathy, particularly for the Mike Brown family. But then there's also a lot of resonance as it relates to folks who've experienced racial profiling, folks who've experienced police brutality, and folks that have not seen justice. I was talking to a colleague last night whose grandmother is 80 years old, and she had called her. Her grandmother called her on Monday and said, "You know, are you doing okay?" And she said, "Yeah, I'm. You know, I'm dealing with this." And she said, "How are you doing, Grandma?" And her grandmother said, well, you know, this is what's expected. And her, and so she kind of unpacked it with her grandmother, and her grandmother said, well, you know, of her 80 years, she's not seen justice for her community with respects to dogs being sicked on folks, all of those things that our generations have experienced before us. We are, for the first time, at least in my generation, are feeling those effects of what it means to have your, you know, constitutional rights be infringed upon when you're trying to express the hurt and the pain that's just rooted in our communities, that is part of the American fabric of this country that we just don't talk about.
When earlier in our discussion, you were talking about going and visiting the site where Michael Brown was shot, mm-hmm. and the memorial that's there, and you've talked about him as a specific person who it's his blood, you know, mm-hmm. But you've also talked about other cases and the mm-hmm. bigger implications. Mm-hmm. How much of this is about Michael Brown and the decision that just came through from mm-hmm. the grand jury about this particular police officer, Darren Wilson, and how much of it is about this bigger problem? I mean, how much of it is separate from that on some level?
Mm-hmm. I think it's more about the bigger picture. It's more about the systemic issues that have really perpetuated what we are experiencing today. And so, though it's related, I think that what has happened with Mike Brown is it has opened up wounds that we've experienced over time, and so people are taking this opportunity to expose the systems that have kept us oppressed and kept us in this situation.
There were a few different rallies and marches mm-hmm. yesterday and last night, and I've heard that there were only 4 arrests, which in a whole city is kind of not that many, mm-hmm. 3 for blocking traffic and 1 for assaulting a police horse, which for some reason seems to be a thing that happens here sometimes. I've also heard that a city bus was made available to people who had marched for a ride back to the starting point, which is incredible. And it does mm-hmm. really stand in contrast from everything we're hearing about St. Louis and even in a lot of other bigger cities around the country. Do you think that there is something special about the police community relationship in Kansas City?
Yeah. I mean, we have organizations and like KC Nova, Kansas City No Violence Alliance. We have groups like Aim for Peace. And then, you know, the police department here, officers like Major L and Chief Forte have made themselves available and have been building community relationships for quite some time. And so I think that that's a big difference. Now, I'm not going to say that folks have not experienced, racial profiling and things like that, or that the police department still has a long way to go as it relates to the representation of the community in which it serves. But, yeah, I think that events like last night and how the police department, as well as our mayor and other agencies, have come together to support peaceful protests. I even met our county sheriff, Mike Sharp, at Metropolitan Baptist Church, who came by to express his appreciation as well as support as well. And so there is a sense of community here that I have not seen or experienced in Ferguson.
How do you feel about race relations in Kansas City in particular?
We are a long ways away from any sort of reconciliation. We have got to begin to address it head on and create more spaces where folks can be honest about it. And I think that, you know, it starts with having conversations with our young people. I serve on the Youth Commission, for example, and we had one of our youth, actually the president of our Youth Commission, speak last night, Gracie Fleming, and she talked a lot about the fact that the current Youth Commission, one of the first issues that came up, and these are youth from all across our city, was race. And they wanted to address the fact that our schools are racially divided, our city is racially divided, And they want, and as well as the inclusion as it relates to places for our youth to go. And so we've got to begin to address this with our youth so that they understand that race is an issue. We have to be very open with them about it. And so, yeah.
Do you think that Ferguson and race relations in America will be a topic of conversation around a lot of Thanksgiving tables? And if so, any advice about how to have those conversations?
I think we have to, yes, first of all, I think that it will be a part of conversations across the country, actually across the around the world as well. And so I think that the best thing to do is to be honest with our youth and each other about our own biases and prejudices and try to understand how those biases or prejudices were learned. Because we're not born that way. And so we have to also address the fact that whatever is getting in the way of human dignity, that we have to be addressing that.
Damon Daniel of Communities Creating Opportunities, thank you so, so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
When Central Standard returns, we'll talk about what you're doing on Thanksgiving and whether it includes going out after the feast. 816-235-2888. Stay with us.